Chevra, last time we kind of we got involved in a tangential sugya, which is connected to the larger issue. Let's go a step back and try to like telescope in terms of what we're up to. The Mishnah tells us that according to the Tanakhama, if an individual sleeps under a bed in the sukkah, you do not fulfill the mitzvah sukkah. Rabbi Yehuda says that we used to sleep under the bed, and that and all was grand. That's basically the beginning of the Mishnah. Now, the Gemara has a discussion as to how come, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would sleep under the bed. And effectively, the whole conversation on Chaf Amid Beis, Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, the top of Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, the conversation boils down to that somehow for Rabbi Yehuda, a bed is not a full-fledged ohel. Right? Effectively, the Gemara gets to the place that a bed is intended to use the top of it, not intended for the things underneath. And therefore, a bed is not a real ohel. That's what the Gemara says. Although an ox apparently is an ohel, even, right? So the Gemara says, yeah, that's like a gezeiras hakasuv, right? The pasuk says, or ubasar tal bishinu batzamas v'gidim tisalchacheni. Actually, one of you said something, I didn't look it up. One of you said that like we should look at the previous pasuk in Iyov. I did not look it up. What's the previous pasuk?
I'll post it in the chat. It's great.
Oh, okay. Please do. So, because I was like, I didn't focus on that until right now. So basically, the Gemara says that the animal counts as as an ohel because that's the pasuk in Eov calls it an ohel. So the first approach in the Gemara, until I'd say a third of the way down, Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, is that a bed is not an ohel. And that's why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would sleep under the bed. Zokti Gemara, v'ibayis ema. Right? It's one line beneath the pasuk in Iyov, Perek Yud. V'ibayis ema. Rabbi Yehuda l'tanei, diras keva be'inon, v'havalei mita diras arai, v'sukkah ohel keva, v'lo asi ohel arai, u'mevato ohel keva. Exactly, Gemara. Tatichaini, tekafeini. Right. In other words, what is it? You should make like milk, and you poured me out like milk and congealed me like cheese. Wow. Okay. Eov was very happy. No. Unbelievably happy person. Okay, but let's go on. Exactly right. Ibayis. The second mahalach in the Gemara is that the reason why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would sleep under the bed is because Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that a sukkah is diras keva. That's why Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the first Mishnah that a sukkah above 20 amos is going to be kosher. Rabbi Yehuda holds sukkah is supposed to be diras keva. The bed is less keva than the sukkah. Because the sukkah, I would say, has to be keva. The halacha makes sukkah by definition keva. The bed is an oiha arai in that you can move a bed from here to there anywhere. And even if the bed happens to be keva, even if you happen to have a 20,000-pound bed, whatever it is that you can't move from place to place, nonetheless, a bed is fundamentally arai, as opposed to a sukkah, which Rabbi Yehuda says is fundamentally keva. Because the bed is arai, so memela lo asi ohel arai umevatel ohel keva. The ohel arai would be an ohel on its own. the bed kishala atzmo. If I just have a bed, and there's, let's say, a corpse under the bed, and I'm under the bed with the corpse, I'm tummy. A bed is an ohel. The only thing is that in the context of an ohel keva, the ohel arai of the bed doesn't rank. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. That lo asi ohel arai umevato ohel keva. The temporariness of the bed doesn't weigh against the kavua of the sukkah. So the Gemara asks, I've heard Shimon, the Omar Nami sukkah diras keva be'inon. Right? The Gemara on, where was it? On the Vav or something. The Gemara had a whole bunch of Tanoim who all say that sukkah is diras keva. And one of those Tanoim is Reb Yehuda. I'm so tired. One of those Tanoim is Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says that a sukkah has to have four walls, which means that Reb Shimon holds that a sukkah is diras keva. Right? Rashi refers us to that Gemara of Zayinim and Beis. The Gemara says that Reb Yehuda, Reb Shimon, Reb Damlia, Reb Lazer, they all hold that a sukkah is diras keva. So Reb Shimon says that a sukkah is diras keva. And still, asi ohel arai umevatel ohel keva. Still, according to Reb Shimon, the ohel arai comes as mevatel the ohel keva. If you remember, in our Mishnah, Reb Shimon said that once upon a time, the servant of Rami Gamliel swept underneath the bed, and they all comment, oh, he's such a Talmud Chacham, he knows the Avodim are exempt from sukkah, that's why he sleeps under the bed. So Reb Shimon is the author of that statement. Reb Shimon is saying when you're under the bed, you don't get the mitzvah sukkah. But why not? If Reb Shimon holds that sukkah is fundamentally ohel keva, and the bed is fundamentally ohel arai, so shouldn't I say that the bed doesn't register in comparison to the sukkah, just like Reb Yehuda says that? So the Gemara says, no. B'hopligi, mar sabar, asi ohel arai mevata ohel keva. Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda have a machlokes as to whether ohel arai can be mevatel ohel keva. The machlokes between Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon is apparently, do I say that ohel is an objective definition? Objectively speaking, the bed is an ohel. So Reb Shimon says it's an ohel. Reb Yehuda disagrees. Reb Yehuda says that the definition of an ohel is relative. And because the bed happens to be in the context of a sukkah, and the bed is arai and the sukkah is keva, so therefore the bed does not count. And therefore, according to Reb Yehuda, you're allowed to sleep under the bed. The machlokas is whether ohel arai is mevato the ohel keva. Does the temporary bed, it's not really mevato. The lashon of the Gemara, the ohel arai is mevato or keva, is like a strange lashon. It means, does an ohel arai count when it's in the context of an ohel keva? I think that's what the Gemara says. Okay, questions, comments? Hi, Zoe.
Good evening. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. How are you?
Good, thanks. But it is mevatel, isn't it? Because it's kind of eliminating its function as an ohel in this context.
According to Rabbi Yehuda,
according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the bed loses its ohel status, right? So if I sleep under the bed, it's okay.
Right. The way you just phrased it was it's unusual lashon to say like that it's mevatel here, but it does seem to fit that definition. Like it seems in that same category.
I mean, the ohel arai is mevatel the ohel keva. It just seems to me that it's going the opposite way. The way I've been explaining the Gemara, it's more that the ohel keva is mevatel the ohel arai. I've been explaining the Gemara more that because of the halachic permanence of the sukkah, Memela, the bed, doesn't rank, right? So I mean, that's my comment on the Gemara, that the Gemara seems to be freezing it in I know what the Gemara means, but it seems to be phrasing it the wrong way. That's the point I'm trying to
I understand that. Thank you.
Okay. So that's the first piece of the Gemara. Next piece of the Gemara. Rav Shimon, Maisa B'Tevi Avdo, right? So we just paraphrased this a minute ago. Rav Shimon tells us that once upon a time, Tevi, the servant of Rabbi Gamliel, is sleeping under the bed. And Rabbi Gamliel tells all the Talmidei Chachamim, all the Zakenim, oh, my servant Tevi is such a Talmud Chacham, he knows Avodah Mepata from the Sukkah, therefore he sleeps under the bed. And through that we learned, right, that's what the end of the mission says. We learned, according to our path, we learned that if you sleep under the bed of the sukkah, you're not guilty. That's the way the Mishnah says it. Lefi darkeinu. The Braisa that the Gemara quotes, however, Tanya, Amar Reb Shimon misichaso shereben gamliyo lamadu shnei dvarim. The Braisa says a slightly different formulation. It's not lefi darkeinu lamadu. Lefi darkeinu sounds like just based on our passing through, because we were witness to that story, we learned that avodim are exempt from sukkah, etc. Reb Shimon in the Braisa says, misichaso shereben gamliyo, from Rabbi Gamliel's talking, we learn two things. Ramanu shavodim p'turim min asukah. One, right, slaves don't have to be in the sukkah. Ramanu shayoshen tachas amita lo yatsi yidei chovaso. We also learned that if you're under the bed, you don't get the mitzvah. Right? Two separate statements. Again, we kind of understand both of them. Right? One statement is that avodim are exempt. The next statement is that if you're under the bed, you don't get the mitzvah. So the Gemara asks, v'lema midevarav shereben gamliel. The Gemara has like a linguistic question. How come in the Braisa we have Rabbi Shimon saying misichaso from his speech? That's like a weird way of speaking. To you, the word sicha, right, is just dibor. It's a much more standard word. I took a class in college with a Dr. William Lee, and Dr. Lee used to always tell us that you shouldn't spend too much. Don't use a $1 word if you could get by with a quarter. That was like his nusach. Like, don't use words that are too that are too fancy. It just doesn't. It doesn't help you. So that's what the Gemara's kasha is over here. How come Rabbi Shimon's lashon is misichaso? Right, that's like a weird word. You should use the word midvarav. So zakti Gemara. Milsa agav orchei kamash malon. He's teaching us something in a backhanded way. Ki adam rav ado bar abo. Ki adam amar rav acha bar ado. Ba'amri lo amar rav acha bar ado. Amar rav hamnuna amar rav. Minayin shafil sichas tamid hachacham in sricha limud. Shenemar v'alehu lo yibol. We know that even the sicha of a Talmud Chacham requires learning. Even the sicha, meaning to say, even though it's just casual speech, as opposed to dibur, which is more thought out, he uses the expression misichaso to tell me that even the sicha of Talmidei Chachamim, there's something to be learned from. You could learn even from the ordinary conversations of Talmidei Chachamim. You could learn many halachos. We derive this from the pasuk in the first parak of Tehillim, v'alehu lo yibol, even the leaves, which is like the lightest, the weakest part of a tree, do not, lo yibol, should not like wither away. The idea is that even the lightest part of a Talmud Chacham, even just the small sicha, kala, even just those small casual expressions, even they Even they, the Alehu lo yibol, even they, there's what to be learned from it. You could learn even from the ordinary words of a Talmud Chacham. I remember, actually, I'm not sure I remember, I'm trying to remember, the hesped that Rav Schechter gave for Rabbi Tendler like 3 weeks ago. So one of the things that he mentioned is that like Rabbi Tendler had like a certain sharp way of speaking. And but every point that he was making was like a point from the Gemara. I'm just totally blanking. He had like one of the, or he had like a couple of these examples. It might come to me as we go on. But the idea of Sichah Talmidei Chachamim is that sometimes you could learn things just from the casual conversations of Talmidei Chachamim, and that's the chiddush of the Brisa's formulation of Rav Shimon's statement. The chiddush is that even the sicha, even ordinary casual conversations, require learning. That's the point in the Gemara. Good. Zaktaisus. Hi, Zoe. See, I like it when like someone speaks besides me. Like, yeah.
I encourage that in my students as well. I'm curious, is this where we learn that an Eved would be exempt from Sukkah, or has that been defined elsewhere? Is that like actually one of the things we learned from this Mishnah?
So apparently that's what the Braisa of Gamliel's the Rav Shimon is saying, that we learn from here that Eved is exempt from Sukkah.
Okay. So this is like the
this
moment.
This is the source. There are two halachos that we learn from here. One, that Eved is exempt from Sukkah. Two, that if you're underneath the bed, you don't get the mitzvah. Those are the two halachos I learned. But Tosfos asks, "Lamanu sha'avodim peturim min ha'sukkah." Tosfos is bothered by the kasha. What's the chiddush? Af agav dehabi mitzvos asei shazman grama. Right, sukkah is a mitzvos asei shazman grama. Women are exempt from mitzvos asei shazman grama. Avodim are exempt from mitzvos asei shazman grama. So why do you need a whole mishnah to tell you that avodim are exempt from sukkah? It's an ordinary mitzvah to say shazman grama. So of course they're exempt. Why do you need the Mishnah to tell it to you? So Zoktaisis, it's trichash m'unan, delotema dechayovin, mishum dechsev teshuk en deturu, kidokama b'sholi perkin. I would have thought that they are chayiv in sukkah because of teshuk en deturu. Right, the Gemara at the Adav Chavches, the Gemara has a pasuk of Ha'ezrach, Lahotzias Hanoshim from Sukkah. The Gemara asks, why do you need a pasuk of Ha'ezrach? Why don't you just say it's regular mitzvah cessation as man grama? Zok the Gemara, well, Sukkah, the idea is Basukos Teshvu Shivas Yamim, live in the Sukkah. Sukkah becomes your home. Just like at home, the husband and wife live in the same home together. So in the Sukkah, you would say that the husband and wife live in the same home together. So you would have thought that sukkah is an exception to the ordinary rule of mitzvah aseh shazman grama. The pasuk of Ha'ezrach teaches me that sukkah is not an exception, and women are in fact exempt from sukkah. Taisus by us is saying the same thing, just with respect to avodim. Taisus is saying, I would have thought that avodim are chayiv in sukkah because of Teshvu Ken Tadiru. Now, when you think about it, that's a much bigger chiddush, no? The fact that Teshvu Ken Tadiru, like, could include women, I understand. Like, you know, it's a family unit. That's who calls Teshvu. You live together. But to say that Avodim are, there's a svara to include Avodim in the mitzvah of Sukkah based on Teshvu Ken Tadiru, I think that is a little more of a stretch. Obviously, I would say on some level, the idea is that, remember, when we talk about Avodim, no, let me strike that from the record. Apparently, Chazal are saying somehow that the Avodim are considered part of the family units, are part of the group. And Teshu Kentadziru Kvim B'chayiv V'Avodim. I remember when I was taking a course in Revel with Dr. Soloveitchik. So he told us that you can't understand slavery until you read, there's some biography that they wrote about Harry Truman and the way he grew up and what was necessary to just keep the house running when you're in, like, again, Harry Truman's not that long ago. I'm pretty sure it's Harry Truman. And just to keep a household running required a tremendous amount of slave labor. Right? We take it for granted. You turn on the sink, you get water. Right? You don't have to go down to the river and schlep the water. Again, I'm not saying slavery is a good thing. Like, don't get me wrong. But the point is that the svara why an eved is thought of as part of teshuk and tadur is because the avodim were necessary for life. They could not live, right, in their times, etc., right, based on their conditions. They could not live without the additional help that the avodim provided. So that's why the svar of teshuk and tadur could extend to avodim as well. Again, I still think that what Tais is saying is a chiddush. It's an extension on the Gemara. The Gemara says it about Noshim, not about Avodim, but nonetheless, I think there is some explanation. Questions, comments, observations, or should we go on? Zoe!
I have an observation. Say? It's an observation.
An observation.
Julia Child's very famous cookbook, The Art of French Cooking, was written explicitly for a household that did not have servants to prepare your food. She has this in the introduction, that this is cooking that you can do. It's the 50s, and everybody prior to that usually had household help. And it's very much saying, like, this cookbook is made for you, household woman, that you can cook by yourself. So I just wanted to share that. It's not that long ago.
That's an important point. In other words, it was probably inconceivable for many people that, like, how can I go and make a meal on my own? I've never done it. I'm used to having, I mean, lahavdil. If you read the biography of Rebbetzin Konievsky, so they talk about how she would make challah like for half of B'nai Brak, and she was like always being mafresh challah with a bracha, but she also had like 50 women who were coming to just like, she was like a chassidish rebbe or a litvish chassidish rebbe. Like, yeah, you could do a lot more when you have additional help, absolutely. So the chiddush of that Julia Child's cookbook was that, yeah, precisely, that you can do it on your own. Okay, so that is this sugya. Good. Should we begin the next Mishnah? This Mishnah, thumbs up. Excellent. So this Mishnah is already getting us into more famous sugyas. What we'll be talking about probably this week and next week is the famous sugya of Maimed. Oftentimes, people will visit someone's sukkah and they'll say, oh my gosh, like your sukkah, you know, the schach is on top of metal and like that's like eating a pig that is cooked in milk or maybe even worse. And people get like all, you know, worked up about maimed, about the support of the schach, that the support of the schach many feel should be from something that is not makabel tumah. So what we're going to do over the next shiur, shiur and a half, etc., is analyze that sugya and see whether it's correct lahalacha. When people get all upset about it, is that the proper thing? So let's get right into it. Zok the Mishnah. Hasomich sukaso b'kar e hamita k'sheira. If a person supports the sukkah with the legs of a bed, so it's going to be kosher. Basically, if you take the bed and you, beds usually are horizontal. If you stick it up vertically, so it could really support the sukkah, no? Could support the schach. Right? As you can see, my beautiful artwork over here. But like you make the bed stand up vertically. So the Tanakama in the Mishnah says that's a perfectly fine sukkah. You can support the schach on the kar ehamita on the legs of the bed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im Eino Yechol Olamid Bifnei Atzma Psula.
Rabbi Schwartz, sorry, I just didn't prepare this. Does this mean on the other side you have something else?
So we'll get into it a little bit more in the Gemara, but for the time being, let's say that you are supporting the schach with the bed. I take my bed. You like it when I draw pictures.
Yeah.
Okay, so I take my my bed is usually like this. This is my standard bed. Right? What I do is I take that bed and I flip it like this. And I have schach on top of the bed. So my sukkah is basically on top of beds.
Oh, there's two beds on each side then.
Or one bed. I mean,
and something else on the other side to hold up.
Yeah, something else on the side, whatever it is. But the point is, I am supporting. The point is, I am supporting my, sukkah with beds. So the Tanakhama says it's fine. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Im ein liyachol alamoy b'fnei atzma psula." Rabbi Yehuda says that if the schach cannot stand up on its own, if you need the bed to support it, it's going to be pasul. That's a machlokes in the Mishnah. If on some sukkah of a karei hamita, I support the sukkah with the legs of a bed, Tanakama says it's fine. Rabbi Yehuda says it's no good. Zakti Gemara, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason of Rabbi Yehuda? The Gemara is not speaking about the Tanakama at all. The Tanakama is just going to be a foil to Rabbi Yehuda. Right? This whole sugya is within Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reason of Rabbi Yehuda? So pligiba Reb Zeir v'Rav Bar Ramo. Chadam Mipnei She'ein La Keva. Reason number one is Ein La Keva. Now, there are three explanations in Rishonim for what Ein La Keva means, but let's just do Rashi. Right? Reason number one, the Gemara is Ein La Keva. How does Rashi learn Ein La Keva?
You can move it when you move the bed.
You can move it when you move the bed, and therefore?
So it's like the bed in the first thing was an araya. It's not.
Right, exactly. It's puzzle, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because this is the same famous Rabbi Yehuda that I know throughout the rest of the Masechta, that a sukkah has to be an ohel keva. And because the bed can be moved, so therefore, it's pasul as a sukkah, because it has to be keva. That's the way Rashi learns. Now, what Rashi is saying is interesting, but the Rishonim are very bothered by Rashi's comment. Right? The Rishonim ask, first of all, you know, throughout the Masechta, or forget throughout the Masechta, just like 10 lines ago, we explained the reason of Rabbi Yehuda that sukkah's diras keva versus diras arai. How come over here the Gemara is using a slightly different lashon, ein la keva, and more fundamentally, the Gemara should just say Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei, just like the Gemara said like 10 lines ago, that Rabbi Yehuda is going l'shitaso, that a sukkah has to be diras keva, so our Gemara should also use such a lashon, Rabbi Yehuda l'tamei. Rabbi Yehuda's l'shitaso. That's one kasha the Rishonim ask on Rashi. Another kasha the Rishonim ask on Rashi is that if Rashi is correct, so that would mean that a sukkah on top of a wagon is no good either. Because the idea is that for Rabbi Yehuda, Rashi is telling me a chiddush within Rabbi Yehuda. I think this is the point that Tosfos is highlighting. a sukkah has to be keva. So that means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, sukkah has to be keva. That should mean that it has to be substantial, significant, a formidable structure. Right? That's keva. The fact that a sukkah can be moved from place to place is not necessarily a chisaron in keva. Right? I don't know if you've ever been to a trailer park, but you have these things that move and they go from place to place. Right? It's not a non-formidable object. It's a significant thing, but it's movable. Zucked Rashi, that the chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda that a sukkah's diras keva means it also has to be something that does not get moved. Right? That's what he says. Ein lo keva means shemetal telas ayde mita. The sukkah will be moved because the bed will be moved. And because you can move it, therefore it's not keva. That's a chiddush in Rabbi Yehuda that Rashi is saying. So all the Rishonim don't like Rashi's explanation. The Rishonim don't like Rashi's explanation because, first of all, it should be relevant for a sukkah on top of a wagon. Second of all, the Lashon of the Gemara should be Rabbi Yehuda L'Taimei. Third of all, we could actually just read this one inside. If you look in the Tosfos, the Tosfos She'ein, the big Tosfos. So Tosfos quotes a Mishnah in the 15th parak of Kehilah, Mishnah Aleph. And then it says, Umi Ukasha Do Kama Daf Chaf Gimel. Right where Tosfos says Daf Chaf Gimel. Tosfos says, Umi Ukasha Do Kama Pasa Rabbi Yehuda Sukkah Gabi Behema. My Taima. Mishum Dachsib Chayga Sukkah Tasa Lachashivas. Yamim Sukkah Riyo Lashiva. Vizu Ein Riyo Lashiva Lafisha Ein Olam Nabiyantiv. Rabbi Yehuda says that a sukkah on top of an animal is possible because the Torah says sukkah, it should be a 7-day sukkah. And the sukkah on an animal is not a 7-day sukkah because you're not allowed to go on top of animals on yontif. So Frek Tosfos, why does the Gemara have to say that a sukkah on an animal is no good? Because you're not allowed to climb onto the animal on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, whatever it is, and it's not Shabbos Yomim, we should just say that it's the regular halacha that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not keva. Elamai, Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, and Tosfos is saying, and we'll have to discuss exactly what Tosfos says next week, but Tosfos is saying that just because you can move something does not mean that it lacks keva. Keva could be a halacha in being formidable, not a halacha in being movable. I think that's the issue that's coming up. Dr. Lang.
Hi, Rabbi Schwartz. So is that why he's bringing in, Tosfot's bringing in the examples from Kalim, that there are all these large objects like ships and things?
Yeah. Another incident? I mean, Tosfos is bringing it in, like that part I kind of didn't get into because of the next opinion in the Gemara that has something to do with Mekabel Tuma and like large ships and the like might be a Keli, but it's not Mekabel Tuma. If it's very, very large, it can't be Mekabel Tuma. That's why Tosfos is bringing it in.
Okay.
But the fundamental point that Tosfos is getting at is the word keva does not imply whether or not it's movable throughout the Masechta. The word keva means, is it significant? Is it hardy? It doesn't really mean, is it movable? But let's go back. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah says that if I support my sukkah, b'karei amita, so the sukkah is possible. Zok the Gemara, what's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda? So reason number one is, mipnei she'ein la keva, which Rashi explained, means that it's movable and therefore it's not kavua. And according to Rashi, this is already Rabbi Yehuda l'shitaso. The Chad Amar, the other opinion is, mitnei shema amida b'dovar mekabel tuma. The other reason is that you are supporting the schach with something that is susceptible to tumah. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's a problem. Zakt Rashi, Shema Amida. Rashi writes, "Af al pi shelo lamanu psul el leschach, hoel the ikar shel schach elu ma'amidon, have a ki'ilu sikech b'davar hamkabel tuma." Does anyone want to try to explain this Rashi? This is like.
It's reminding me, Rabbi Schwartz, when we talked about the walls. I don't remember which Tana said that the walls had to be made out of material.
So there was one shita that the Mordechai quoted a shita that the walls also have to be things which are not makabel tuma, etc. Didn't seem to make it. That shita doesn't seem to resonate with anybody. But this idea of ma'amid, the Gemara on Zayin Amid Beis has a lashon that's mechitza, and the Torah calls it schach. Right, so schach and mechitza is one and the same. So the Mordechai over there quoted a shita from the Rav Yoh that, again, not accepted at all, but there is a shita that the walls of the sukkah have to be kosher for schach. This idea of mamid is very similar to that. I think you're right, Tanya. In other words, what Rashi is saying is that even though the halacha of davar mikabel tuma, etc., is only about the schach itself, but since hoel v'ikaro shel schach elu ma'amidon, have a ki'ilu sikech v'davar mikabel tuma. Since the schach is supported by these things, so these things become like the ikar of the schach. So it's as if you're doing schach with the dover that's mekabel tuma. The schach could not exist, could not stand up, if not for the bed that's supporting it. So therefore, the bed becomes like the schach, or the schach becomes mekabel tuma like the bed, because the schach could not exist without the dover that's mekabel tuma. Many of the Achronim understand that that according to Rashi, the din of Maimed is a din d'oraisa. There's a din d'oraisa, perhaps. Again, it's not muchrach in Rashi, but it's possible that what Rashi is saying is that the thing that supports something is the ikar of that thing. And therefore, the maimed of the schach is ki'ilu the ikar schach. But we have a halacha, a similar halacha by Tvilas Kelam. By Tvilas Kelam, there's a machloka, so we've shown him about if I have, only metal and glass require Tvilas Kelam. Right? If I buy Kelam from a guy, you have to immerse it in the mikvah. Only metal and glass has to be immersed in the mikvah. What about if I have something that's made of a different material, but the metal or the glass is maimid, that thing, right? The keli won't stand on its own. It will collapse if not for the metal. So that's a discussion, hilchos tefilas kelam, about the din of maimid. Like, do I assume that the maimid is the ikar keli in this case? That's the question.
Rabbi Schwartz, do you need to get some water?
I'm okay. I'm gonna push through, right? The shir must go on.
Everything reminds me of kashrus, and maimid cannot be mevatel. So I'm thinking somehow.
Excellent. Right. And so at the beginning of in Yeridayan Basa B'cholov, right? We have that maimid is not going to be batel, meaning if I have something which is necessary, let's say I have a davar that is an iser b'fnei atmo. If I make cheese in the cavity of a treif animal, a pig or something, or a non-shechted cow, so In that case, it's maimed, because it completely changes the milk to become cheese, right? So it's noticeable. It's always there. You can't ignore it. So it's not going to be batal. Similarly, over here, there's halacha of maimed by the schach. And the way Rashi learns the din of maimed by the schach is that this din of maimed means that it's ki'ilu, the ikar of the schach, are these makabel tuma things. Ms. Rachel Gutman, how are you?
I'm good. But what I don't understand is what we mean by the ikar of the schach, because it's, at the end of the day, it's not the schach. And also, it doesn't perform the function of what a schach is supposed to do. Like, schach is meant to protect or give shade.
Would the schach be able to stay up without this thing?
Right. No, I can understand that it's an important part. Is that what Iker is coming to say? Or is it saying, like, it is the very essence of what schach is? Because it supports it. Yeah, I don't know.
So the second way that you're saying is very hard to explain. The second way that you just suggested, that if I understand you correctly, there are two ways of analyzing this. We could say that the supports of the schach become the schach itself, or we could say that since the schach cannot survive without the supports, so therefore the supports are an essential part of the schach, and the supports have to be governed by the rules of schach. Right? Do I say that the supports become the schach or not become the schach? I think that's part of the question that is coming up. I don't know how much it matters for right now. It might matter as we get more involved in the sugya. But for right now, all I see is that according to Rashi, within the second opinion within Reb Yehuda, there's a din of maimed, which Rashi says might be deraisa. Okay? Remember, we're all within Reb Yehuda, who says that supporting the sukkah with the bed is puzzle. And we have two explanations within Reb Yehuda. One explanation is Ein Lakeva. The other explanation within Reb Yehuda is this in the maimed. What should emerge, therefore, and we'll have to spend a lot of time on this next week in Yiratz Hashem, is that maimed should definitely not be a problem, a halacha. Maimed is one of two explanations within this one shitas hatanoim of Rabbi Yehuda. If I have a machlokes tanakam in Rabbi Yehuda, so l'cha'ora, the halacha should not follow Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha should follow the tanakam. This entire Gemara is within the alternate universe called Rabbi Yehuda universe. So it's one explanation within the Rabbi Yehuda universe. So to be nervous about Maimed seems like super duper chumra land, which, I mean, not just super duper chumra, just it doesn't calculate according to the normal rules of learning the sugya, because it's one opinion within Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. But let's just chazer, let's go back.
Can I ask a structural question?
Yeah.
How is Rav Zera and who was our other one? Rabbi Ababal Mamal? Like, how did that fit into this? So, yeah, because it said like one had the opinion of, presumably, Rabbi Abba had the opinion that it isn't Keva, and Zera had the opinion that it was Ma'amid. Like, I don't understand how this is structured.
So the structure of the Gemara is like this. We have a tradition that there's a machlokas between Reb Zera and Rabbi Abba Bar Amal about this point. But we don't know who said what. So Chad Amar, one of them said, because of Maimed. The other one said, B'nei She'en Lakeva. But I don't know which one is Reb Zera, which one is Rabbi Abba Bar Amal. I'm not sure who said what.
But this is also operating in the universe of Rabbi Yehuda. That's my question.
Correct. The entire Gemara begins, my time is Reb Yehuda. Right? What's the reason, Rabbi Yehuda? Because the machlokas Rabbi Zeira and Baba Bar Mamo, what's the reason, Rabbi Yehuda? But this entire thing, again, is within the Rabbi Yehuda universe, and there are two possibilities, Nesha in La Keva or Maimed. Mai Beinai, who the Gemara asks, what's the practical nafgamina? So the Gemara says, Kigon Shana'at Shepudin Shabarzel Besike Chalehen. If you take iron skewers, iron beams, and you put the schach on top of the iron beams. Lemando melofishin la keva, hariyesh la keva. If you hold that the reason of Reb Yehuda is because ain la keva, so in this case, yesh la keva. In this case, right, it's a permanent structure. It's an iron beam. Meaning to say, if you feel that the reason why Rabbi Yehuda passes is because of Ein Lakeva, so in this case that you have steel beams supporting the Schach, so the steel beams are Yesh Lakeva. So it would be Kasher according to Rabbi Yehuda. However, if you hold of the reason of Maimed B'davam Kabal Tuma, so in this case, it is a davam kabotuma. It's a metal beam. So it should be possible. So that's an afkamin in the Gemara. Okay. Again, the issue that Zoe mentioned within the Taisus is that how come the Gemara does not say an afkamin in the other direction? Conceivably, we could have thought of cases of something that is not mekabel tuma, but is also not keva. Right? The Gemara only gives the nafkamina one way. Right? We have steel beams, which are keva, but are mekabel tuma. Why don't we give a nafkamina of something that is not mekabel tuma, but is not keva? Right? And that was the case of like the heavy box. A heavy box is technically movable, but if it's like 40 kur, right? So then that box is not makabel tuma, but it's movable, right? So how come that was not a nafkamina the Gemara presented? That's the issue that Taisus addressed. Let's go back. Two possible reasons for the Rabbi Yehuda. The nafkamina is the steel beams. Amar Abaye, lo shanu ella samach. If the schach is on the bed itself, if you are supporting the schach with the legs of the bed, that's our machlokes. Samach b'kar e hamita. But if the entire sukkah are beds, that all the walls of the sukkah are beds, so then it is going to be kosher. My time, lemadam alopisha in la keva, have a yesh la keva. Lemadam neshim amida dava kabotuma, have a ema amida bedava ham kabotuma. Basically, if I understand this correctly, what Abaye is saying is as follows. If I have schach, and I drew the picture wrong beforehand. If I have schach, and I'm supporting the schach with the beds, the bed is like something that's there to hold the schach up. That's the shaila of Maimed. But let's say I have a bed, which is the wall for the sukkah. This is the way I drew the picture beforehand. Right? The bed is the wall for the sukkah. So in that case, Abaye says, it's going to be kosher. If the schach is not, or actually I drew this wrong again. Yeah, let's look at Rashi. Rashi makes it easier. Avosikecha hamita, v'lo samach hasikuch b'karoim el agabi yesedos. Right. What Rashi is saying is like this. The case that it's kosher is that if I have schach and the schach is supported however it's supported. But I have the walls of the sukkah are a bed. Right? The walls of the sukkah are the beds. So the walls of the sukkah or the beds are not supporting the schach. The schach is being supported like it's attached to a wall, whatever it is. And the schach is not supported by the bed. So in that case, it's kasha. Lo shanu.
Rabbi Schwartz, what are the yesedos? Like, are they like canopy things sticking up? Like what?
I think it's just like pegs.
But like what? They're the opposite side of the feet of the bed go one way and the yesedos go up.
So I thought the idea is that like you have some pegs somewhere that are holding up the schach. So my schach is supported by this peg. And this peg is not makabel tuma, whatever it is. Then I have beds, which are the walls of the sukkah, but are not supporting the schach. That case is kosher. Again, I said it wrong 5 minutes ago. But the point that Abaye is making is that if it's samach, if the schach is on top of the bed itself, then it's a problem. But sikech agave hamita, but the schach is on top of the bed, on top of the sense of that the schach is elevated above the bed is not supporting the schach, but the bed is just the wall of the sukkah, so then it's going to be kasher. My timer. Lemada melafishein la keva. If you hold that the concern is that the schach isn't permanent, isn't strong, in this case it's strong. In this case, the bed is not supporting the schach at all. So again, just to make it more clear, this case is going to be kosher. If this is my schach, and I have bed underneath the schach, but it's not supporting the schach, that's going to be kosher. Because ultimately, the schach is yesh lo keva. The schach is permanent. It's fixed. That's great, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And, right, you're worried about Dabar Mekabal Tumah, that you're maimed the Dabar Mekabal Tumah. In this case, the beds are not the maimed. The beds are not supporting the schach. So effectively, what the Gemara is saying is that the halacha of our Mishnah, which is pasul according to Rabbi Yehuda, is only true when the beds are actually supporting the stach. Ms. Gutman, you had a comment?
I was just wondering, what if the beds are not the only support, but like how do you determine? Like you have the pegs, and it's also the schach is sort of al-gabe can kind of sounds like it's resting on the beds.
Yeah. So,
but yeah.
So the way Rashi learned it, it depends what's the ikar support. You have to figure out which one is the main one. And sometimes I guess it's going to be hard to figure that out, but that's the way Rashi learned the Gemara.
Baye doesn't track with the Mishnah because the Mishnah makes it directly on it.
The Mishnah says that I'm supporting the schach.
So it sounds like it's not like pegs, it's the actual...
Right, no, so that's correct. In other words, that's sort of what Abaye is saying. Abaye is saying that the only reason why Rabbi Yehuda passels it in the Mishnah is because the schach cannot stand on its own. But were I to have a different case, if I were to have a case that the schach is on top of the beds, but not supported by the beds, so in that case, it's going to be kosher. I think Abaye is just saying pshat in the Mishnah.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it just seems very obvious that I think I'm missing something.
Yeah, he's adding in the kuda. You're right. The Mishnah only speaks about when the schach is on top of the bed. If the schach is not on top of the bed, it's all fine. That's basically the Gemara according. That's the Gemara. Oh. So we'll just, I guess, leave you with one question, and we'll pick up from here next week. Look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. What's that Rashi saying?
A complete bed?
A complete bed. Okay. As opposed to?
Well, we had before, if you just had pieces of a bed, then you had to determine when it would have become for schach. But
so that was a question in terms of what pieces of aruka ushne ragleha, right? The
legs of the bed.
Yeah. So right. So it could be that's what it's coming to exclude. And meaning that Rashi seems to be saying that the halacha of maimed, assuming that we're talking about maimed, is only true if it's a full-fledged bed. Those type of situations that we had earlier of like the partial bed that's holding something up, whatever it was, if you have like the long bedpost and like the two little legs at the bottom, that might not be mekabel tum on the level of d'oraisa. And if it's not mekabel tum on the level of d'oraisa, so perhaps that's not the topic of conversation. But again, this will require more discussion next time. This sugya that we'll talk about next week, it will be a lot of fun. There's a lot to see in the Rishonim over here. Yetzer Hashem, this is a good coming attraction as opposed to the sugyas that we've been speaking about with like raising kids on top of rocks and et cetera. So this is a little more relevant than raising children on rocks. Okay, Chevra. Yeah. There's a lot of
go ahead.
No, it's just it was more a theoretical question before you were talking about the nafka mina not going both ways. Generally, when you see an ikab minayhu, does it go both ways? Or like, is this unusual to see it only go one way?
I think it is unusual. I think that's why Tosis is bothered by it. Yeah. Like we should say nafka mina is in both directions. You should create a case in both directions, yeah. Okay, Dr. Lang,
hi, Rabbi Schwartz. I don't want to keep you from getting some water. I'm bothered, though, if the bed is awry and your bed is used for the walls, how is this keva? In Rabbi Yehuda world.
In Rabbi Yehuda world, well, that's the point, that it's not keva. And that is the reason why it's puzzle, according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to one explanation, according to the first Amora, the way it's understood by Rashi, what that means is that the bed could be moved, and because the bed could be moved, so therefore the sukkah is not a permanent structure, and that's why it's no good.
Then how would we ever get to the Mekabel Tumah explanation, I guess is my question. Like, it seems like if Rabbi Yehuda is claiming a bed in and of itself is awry in this scenario, your walls would presumably have to be keva. So, like, why would we ever need to go into this Mekabel Tumah explanation?
Again, so it's a machlok, yes? And the opinion that gets into Mekabel Tumah would say that, you know, this type of arai is not called arai. The fact that you can move it from place to place, like what we were discussing beforehand, just being mobile does not necessarily mean that it's arai. Right? So
I think I figured out why I'm bothered by this. It seems like when they're explaining the Shpudim, that we have this Na'at, that seemed like it was like the pegs were in the ground, that there was something more fixed about that actual object versus like the bed seemed to be that there was nothing attaching it.
I think I lost you.
Okay. So when we have the explanation of the, like if you're using the metal beams,
mm-hmm.
The verb there, na'at, I understood to mean like it's somehow in the ground, like it's a peg in the ground. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I was understanding that as making it keva versus the mitah doesn't have any of that. So was I misunderstanding that?
No, I think that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm still confused how you ever would get to the Mekabel Tumah if the beds always arrive. Okay. Like, I'm not understanding in Rabbi Yehuda world why we'd ever need the Mekabel Tumah explanation, I guess.
Well, again, there, some would say that the arai, that this thing is not called arai. No, you really drank the Kool-Aid. You're convinced that it's called arai in this case.
No, I'm living in Rabbi Yehuda world.
Right, but even in Rabbi Yehuda world, I don't know this is called arai. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says, that it has to be keva, meaning it has to be a formidable structure. This is a formidable structure. The fact is, it's a formidable structure that can move from place to place. Right? That was the example that we gave of like a mobile home. Mm-hmm. Right? So I don't know, just because it can move, I don't know, that means that it's not keva. I think that.
Yeah, I think I'm just bothered by that verb, like the idea that the shpudim were fixed in the ground.
Yeah, we'll have to, obviously, we're going to return to this next week in Mitzvah. Ms. Gutman, you had a comment?
Oh, yeah. I was just surprised that we had a whole Mishnah only with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that we don't follow. Like, it's what similar to what you were saying about.
So we'll have to see in the Rishonim next time in the Ramban and Bahamar. I give some Rishonim on this sugya. Does the fact that the entire Gemara is focusing on Rabbi Yehuda, does that maybe serve as a reason why I should pask in Lahalacha like Rabbi Yehuda?
Oh.
Right? In other words, the ordinary rule of Psak Halacha, that Tanakam versus Rabbi Yehuda, I don't follow Rabbi Yehuda, maybe the fact that there's so much of this conversation about Rabbi Yehuda would be a raya to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And that might bring the chumra of Maimid into the mainstream. Mm. Tanya?
I'm just wondering, by asking my time of Rabbi Yehuda, you're also somehow asking the opposite of my time of the Tana Rishona, of Tanakama. Like, by identifying why he would say it's puzzle, you would be explaining why they say it's kshera.
Yes.
Of the Gemara is...
But the whole formulation of the Gemara is within Rabbi Yehuda. There's a machlokas within Rabbi Yehuda as to why Rabbi Yehuda says it's puzzle.
And we can't retroject that.
The reasons of Reb Zeir and Reb Abba Bar Mamel don't matter for the Tanakhama.
Right.
Tanakhama is going to say, I don't care what your reason is. It's kosher no matter what. What difference does it make? Again, we'll pick up on this in Yitzhak Hashem next time. Okay, Chevra, have a great Shabbos. Thank you for coming to learn, and we should continue learning Torah, and Judaism is awesome. Okay.
Thanks, Rabbi Schwartz. Good Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz.
Good Shabbos.